This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyas Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Over the past 2 decades, thousands of our citizens were forced into exile due to poor governance. Many of you here are victims of this oppressive system.
That's New Gambian President Adama Barrow speaking over the weekend in Dakar. Details next.
Also, security challenges make it difficult for aid workers to stay safe and deliver humanitarian support in the Central African Republic. And more than 300 prisoners have been released from Burundi's central prison.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, still has not returned to his country. Sources say he's expected to arrive any time now that former longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh has left the country. West African forces have secured a number of government buildings and are in the process of clearing the State House. Over the weekend, Barrow spoke to the Gambian community in Dakar, where he has been living during the political stalemate in which Jammeh had refused to step down. West African forces reportedly have secured a number of government buildings and are in the process of clearing the State House.
Over the past 2 decades, thousands of our citizens were forced into exile due to poor governance. Many of you here are victims of this oppressive system. Whether through denial of press freedom, abuse of human rights and political intolerance, but you never gave up on the Gambia. Today, on behalf of all Gambians, I thank you for your patriotism and dedication to make our country fit for all to live peacefully.
Barrow says his government will work in partnership with the people to inform and educate. He also addressed humanitarian issues.
I am aware of the humanitarian suffering of thousands of Gambians stranded in Senegal. Efforts have been made by the host government, the Red Cross, and other private groups to bring relief to those displaced. I have directed a member of my delegation to work with all stakeholders to support our people. Most importantly, we are working conclusively in resolving the conditions that create a great problem. To all of you who were forced by political circumstances to flee our country, you now have the liberty to return home.
Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, speaking over the weekend to the Gambian community in Dakar, Senegal.
Last year, humanitarian aid workers were involved in more than 365 security incidents in the Central African Republic, more than in Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, or Iraq. As VOA's Zach Baddorf reports, the security challenge makes it difficult for aid workers to stay safe and to deliver humanitarian support.
Aid workers distribute food at an internally displaced persons camp in Bambari, one of the main flashpoints in the Central African Republic. Fighting between rival armed groups in the area has displaced about 10,000 people in the past month alone. In late December, the Doctors Without Borders compound in Bambari was robbed twice. Bambari's mayor, Mathieu Batapan, says it was unidentified individuals who committed the robberies, not the armed rebel groups that control the town. We deplore all that, he says. I think the cause of all these break-ins is the misery, the poverty. That could perhaps explain it. But it's also the mentality, the education. If you're not educated, one can do this kind of behavior. After the robberies, Doctors Without Borders reduced the size of its team and its activities in Bunbury. Suspended aid work can lead to longer-term effects. Emmanuel Lampert is Doctors Without Borders representative in the CAR.
Small children not being immunized and so more vulnerable to those kind of transmittable diseases. All other activities in terms of prevention of diarrheal diseases.
The rate of mortality for children has increased over the past few years because they were not being immunized during the peak of the crisis in 2013 and 2014. With 2.2 million Central Africans, nearly half of the population, in need of humanitarian assistance, aid workers here are constantly operating in tough areas. Across the country, the International NGO Safety Organization recorded 27 injuries in attacks against aid workers last year. That's more than in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Somalia. 5 aid workers were killed. United Nations Humanitarian Affairs official Barbara Batista told VOA that aid organizations rely on the government and MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping force in the CAR, to protect them and the civilian population.
It's challenging because none of the two have the means to really implement full coverage. Forces of MINUSCA are limited. They cannot cover the whole country.
While the UN has about 12,000 soldiers throughout the country with heavy machine guns and armored vehicles, the government's army and police are under an arms embargo, have little training, and maintain little presence outside of the capital. Lampert says the worsening security situation is a result of fighting over natural resources, making access for humanitarians more difficult. Ocha's Batista says officials coordinate with UN forces to try to get appropriate protection.
Considering that the means and the capacity is limited, at least we can prioritize and say, listen, this we believe is a hotspot that should be taken care of in the coming week or month. And I have to say that so far they are reactive. They are considering what the humanitarians are saying.
What they cannot do, unfortunately, is guarantee aid workers' safety when they enter dangerous areas. Zach Badorf for VOA News in the Central African Republic.
More than 300 prisoners have been released from Burundi Central Prison. This comes after President Nkurunziza granted amnesty to some prisoners last month. Moses Habyarimana has the story from Bujumbura.
Celebrations erupted in the Burundi Central Prison Mbimba in Bujumbura after more than 300 prisoners were released earlier today. 58 of them were supporters of the Movement for Solidarity and Democracy, MSD, a political party in Burundi that was banned. The supporters were sentenced to life in prison for participating in an illegal demonstration that turned violent in 2014. Ndayishimiye Jamari is one of the MSD supporters just released. He spoke on behalf of the others. He says he really thanks very much President Pierre Nkurunziza for his forgiveness and that they had no hope anymore and that today is another day. He says they are ready to go out and build their nation and he hopes other prisoners will also get the opportunity to be released. 2,500 prisoners are expected to be eventually released following President Pierre Nkurunziza granting pardons to prisoners. Bukuru Freddy was arrested in 2014 for mismanagement of public funds.
Shenaza nikasema ni kwamba nashukuru gisi raisi ametukumbuka sisi.
What he can say right now is to thank the president that he did thought about them and helped them go back to their families. He says that he has learned a lot from their mistakes and will not repeat again. This is not the first time Burundi's president has granted amnesty to prisoners. The president granted amnesty to minors who were arrested during protests against his bid for a third term in April 2015. The Burundi Minister of Justice, Laurentine Kanyana, said that this time around there were no exceptions and that those who merited to be released were included on the list. She says there was not the system which they used to consider while releasing the prisoners, and that this time around there were no exceptions. The minister says she had a feeling that those exceptions were not fair, since Burundi leaders love all Burundi citizens equally. Thousands of Burundians were arrested in 2014 and 2016 after participating in the protest against President Pierre Nkurunziza's move to run for a third term in the office. Since then, more than 500 people were killed in violence and hundreds of thousands fled the country. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A Senegalese man is believed to be among the 23 missing people in an Italian avalanche that occurred last Thursday. The man, Faye Dame, was working at the four-star hotel when it was struck by the avalanche, and it was not until today that people realized he was missing. The avalanche hit the hotel after multiple severe earthquakes struck the region the day before. African migrants joined volunteers to help with ongoing relief and recovery efforts. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the humanitarian efforts and spoke with me about the latest disaster to hit the Italian region.
Well, hopes are really fading now for survivors in this horrendous hotel avalanche. The avalanche that struck Hotel Rigopiano on Wednesday last week. The Senegalese immigrant Faye Dame was now believed to be among those buried beneath the ruins. And what's remarkable about this story is nobody knew that he was there until the weekend. So he is a new addition to the missing. And he's 30 years old. He was working legally at the hotel. He had obtained his official refugee status and was recognized by the government. And what's amazing is the police were notified that he may be among the victims, he may be among those missing, by a couple who had stayed at the hotel and noticed him working there. Because he doesn't have relatives in Italy, it seems that nobody picked up that he was actually missing.
Can you tell us what you know about the actual avalanche? When exactly did it happen and what did it do to the hotel? I know it struck the hotel, but did it destroy the hotel?
The Hotel Rigopiano was struck by this huge avalanche after four earthquakes struck the region of Abruzzo last Wednesday. Nine people have been rescued from the ruins, but another 23 or 24 are still missing. Six people have been confirmed dead. What was incredible about this avalanche was it swept almost a tsunami of snow and ice down the mountain, the equivalent of 60,000 tons sweeping down onto this hotel, lifting it off its foundations and crushing people below. And there were huge problems in trying to get to the area, as rescue teams could not get through the area because there had been so much snow and they didn't have the equipment to get in there. So it's been a very painstaking operation trying to rescue people from the ruins. And they're still working today. And I must say, hopes of finding people alive now are diminishing with every hour.
I understand this was a four-star hotel. I don't know how full it was. Do you have any information on that?
Well, what was amazing was the residents were reportedly terrified after the earthquakes, and they had packed their bags. They were lined up in the hall of the hotel, in the reception area, waiting to be collected. And there were delays because there were no snow plows available to try and get through the huge amount of snow that was blocking the area. And they were trapped in that area when the avalanche struck. It's not clear whether the hotel was full, but they were certainly ready to go and very anxious about what had happened.
Also, I understand a group of African migrants have joined the volunteers, and they joined on Saturday in helping with relief efforts.
That's right. These migrants who originally came from Senegal and Guinea have previously done volunteer humanitarian work in the northern city of Turin, and they offered to help in the region after it was struck by the earthquakes and this deadly avalanche which engulfed the hotel. They've been volunteering with the Red Cross for the last 2 years, and they specialise in logistics, so they helped to set up a tent for the rescue teams working to free people from the avalanche. It was interesting hearing their comments. One fellow from Guinea, Barry Misbao, said that the situation was very, very difficult for the migrants because they were not accustomed to dealing with the cold weather, and yet they felt really great about giving a helping hand and helping out those who were in trouble and helping out the rescue teams.
And the Italian newspaper came out today with a survey regarding the migrants. Can you tell us about this survey?
It seems that this survey that was published in one of the daily newspapers, Corriere della Sera, shows that almost two-thirds of Italians are positive about the government trying to establish control centres in every region to process and possibly arrange the repatriation of illegal immigrants. So it seems that there's a strong line of support there for the government. They also believe that migrants who ask for asylum should also be given some sort of social works. Now, 63% are in favour of that too. So we're seeing a strong indication from Italians that they want to see a greater contribution from migrants who come here because there is a great concern that they are taking or receiving some sort of benefit from the Italian government, and they want to see the migrants give something back while they are processed or while they decide whether they want to stay in Italy or not.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, still has not returned to his country. Security challenges make it difficult for aid workers to stay safe and deliver humanitarian support in the Central African Republic. And more than 300 prisoners have been released from Burundi's central prison. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
And for more news around the continent, a top Cameroonian general in charge of forces fighting Boko Haram militants has died in a helicopter crash. Authorities say three other military officials and two crew members also died in the crash. General Jacob Koji and the others died in the crash last evening near Bogo, a Cameroon village on the border with Nigeria. The Boko Haram insurgency has spread from Nigeria to neighboring countries, including Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. The fighting and violence has killed more than 25,000 people and displaced more than 2 million.
The World Health Organization Director General, Margaret Chan, is calling for greater equity in the delivery of health care for rich and poor alike. The WHO chief is urging delegates attending the agency's annual executive board meeting to do more to close the health gap between the haves and the have-nots. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
This is Margaret Chan's last term as Director General. The new head of the World Health Organization will be confirmed at the World Health Assembly in May. So perhaps unsurprisingly, Chan stressed the many achievements which have been made in health under her watch, while not shying away from pointing out the shortcomings. She says health inequalities often are aggravated by the high price of medical products, but notes the WHO initiatives have successfully pushed down the prices of vaccines and other medical items. She says huge price reductions in a vaccine for chronic hepatitis C infection are now making it possible for more than 1 million people living with this illness in developing countries to receive life-saving treatment. Chan says Positive actions by WHO succeeded in ending a yellow fever epidemic in Angola and Democratic Republic of Congo in September. She also says measles immunizations over the past 15 years have saved the lives of 20 million children, and progress continues to be made in controlling HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria.
The achievement that brought the most joyful headlines came at the end of last year, when WHO published final trial results demonstrating that the new Ebola vaccine confers nearly 100% protection. We have by no means defeated this re-emerging disease, but when the next outbreak inevitably occurs, responders will not be empty-handed.
Chan, however, warns nations must remain vigilant of the many existing health threats and emerging diseases. She urges all countries to keep a close watch over outbreaks of avian influenza in birds and related human cases. She says the world is better prepared to tackle the next bird flu pandemic, but not well enough, adding the nations must remain on high alert for fresh outbreaks of this deadly disease. Chan says the global tobacco epidemic is killing 6 million people prematurely every year, but that cheap, effective measures, such as raising taxes on cigarettes, can control and prevent this epidemic from spreading. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Britain has indicated that it will seek a so-called hard exit from the EU, likely to include leaving the single market, the world's largest free trade bloc. The country is looking for new trading partners around the world, but as Henry Ridgewell reports, the government will find it difficult to balance voters' demands for lower immigration with the need for new free trade deals.
The British government says its vision is of a more global Britain, trading freely with growing economies like India and China once it is outside the European Union. Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson visited several Indian cities last week, eager to build bridges before Britain drops out of the European Union.
We may be leaving the EU, we may be taking back control of our borders, but my Indian friends, I say to you, that does not mean we want to haul up the drawbridge.
But critics say Britain is doing just that, even as it asks India to open trade talks. Education is a major British product, but numbers of Indian students in Britain are falling fast, halving in just 5 years. India blames Britain's tightening visa system. Pratik Dattani is British director for the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce and Industry.
It's not all one-way traffic that the UK can sell internationally and not bring anything in. There has to be an open policy in terms of allowing immigration.
That could be a tough sell to Britons who voted to leave the EU, hoping it would cut immigration. Britain is hoping for flexibility. At the World Economic Forum in Davos last week, Indian ministers voiced willingness to discuss a deal, but no formal talks can take place until after Britain has left the European Union. Even then, a deal would likely take years to reach agreement, says Dattani.
India and the EU have been negotiating a free trade agreement for 7 or 8 years, and many of the areas that have meant it has taken such a long time have been asks from the UK itself.
Britain says it will look to the Commonwealth for new trade deals when it leaves the European Union. A Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting is due to take place later this year in London.
That's an opportunity for the British government really to show the rest of the Commonwealth, of which India is a massive part, to show the rest of the Commonwealth that Britain is open for business.
Despite the big ambitions, analysts say Britain will find it difficult to strike quick trade deals after it leaves the European Union. That has raised fears in London that businesses could face a so-called cliff edge the day Britain leaves the bloc. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Thank you.